Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show, brought to you by Bitbox, Stampseed, the Bitcoin Advisor, and ShopinBit. Go to bitcoininfinity.com for books, merch, and more. Enjoy the conversation.
Philip, welcome back to the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Luke. Thanks, Knut. Knut, sorry.
Yes.
I used to know a Knut in back in the days, but he liked to have it as a silent K.
Oh,
yeah.
What a nutcase.
Yeah. With a K.
No, without silent one, right?
Knut case.
What was he, Swedish or like?
He was Swiss.
Swiss?
Yes.
All right.
There we go.
I didn't know there were Swiss people called Knut.
I never knew there was people called Knut in the first place.
Oh, you didn't?
No. He was the first, and you're the second.
Didn't you read about King Knut in school?
That's yeah, no, and then I realized, yes, I could be more red.
It is a different spelling, though. It's a C, not a K, because the British are, you know, interesting with the spellings.
Yeah, well, if they put a C in front of an N, and if you rearrange the letters, it's
yeah, but please don't do that.
Yes, we won't do that on the show. Anyway.
Well, Philip, you're a royal old chap, you. How are you?
Fantastic. Here we are in Maribor.
And how's the weather in Maribor?
Yeah, I love the weather. The weather's fantastic here. You know, it's cool and sunny.
It's the sunny crisp side of the Alps.
Yes, it's the sunny side of the Alps. That's the slogan of the conference.
Yeah.
I unironically thought it was nice and warm coming from Finland, so it's actually pretty good.
Oh, you did?
Anything's warmer than Finland, really. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and almost everything's colder than Buenos Aires. So, yeah, this is an interesting opening. So, Philip, how's the last year? When did we last talk to you? January 3, I think.
January.
January 3rd.
I think it was January 3rd. Was it this year?
I think we talked like something like November or December was when we recorded, but we released it.
We released it on January 3rd.
So it's almost a year. So I think we can actually ask you, how has your year been?
Yes.
It's been an interesting year, both Bitcoin and Bitcoin-wise for January 3 and personally as well. So where do I start? January 3 wise, we released on January 3, the day you released this, that our first recording was when we released Aqua, wallet. And what a release. It's grown organically to about 45,000 downloads. We haven't marketed it, actually spent on marketing. We've only just done tweets and social media stuff. And it's grown organically because it's actually a fantastic wallet. It's a go-to wallet for newcomers, onboarding new people. And it's going to be big in Latin America because of its USDT exposure. I know us Bitcoin maximists are not really so much into USDT, but the truth is that USDT usage is much bigger in Latin America than Bitcoin usage. So we have to somehow leverage that in Bitcoin's favor. So they want USDT, they want US exposure. And to actually get USD exposure, the real thing, it's difficult for a lot of them, digitally and physically. So the next best or even better is apparently USDT Tether. And so we can offer that. But the best thing is we do it on Bitcoin Rails. We do it on Liquid, not on ERC20, Tron or any of that stuff. What's genius about the wallet is we use atomic swaps, thanks to Bolt, so we can transfer their USDT on any shitcoin rail into our Aqua wallet, and it will come out as Bitcoin Liquid. So it's one way of just moving more stuff onto Bitcoin.
So it's a shitcoin refinery in a way.
Precisely that, yes. And we're trying to drive Bitcoin adoption because when people see, the face of the wallet is that we have a savings account, that's your normal Bitcoin main chain, and you have Bitcoin on Liquid, which is your Liquid and Lightning account, and then your USDT account, you have your savings account, spending account, and USDT account. And you can swap between one another with the fees that are getting better using Bolts, atomic swaps, and it's basically what we're trying to onboard the next billion people with.
No, right.
It's, you know, we have to make Bitcoin user friendly. I think it's become, thanks to innovations like Aqua and Liquid, and what we need to make as the slogan is when you open the wallet, sometimes something that your grandmother can use.
Excellent. And you're a frequent user of the Afro wallet. Like, look, you've used it more than I have, at least I know.
I mean, the instant they came out, I downloaded it just out of like, hey, let's try this. You gave us the preview, so I knew I had to give it a try. And yeah, I'm a big fan of Bolts generally. Like, I read a couple of Lightning nodes now, and Bolts is always my go-to if I need to get in and out of anything through Liquid. And so Aqua having that built in already. The only one UX problem, that it's not even a problem, it's just that it's slightly slower than other Lightning wallets because of the Bolts swap.
Yes. But we'll work on that. That's the way we are going to, on the next spending round, we're going to actually focus, because we are focused on more development and maybe a little bit of marketing. So yeah, it's always worth trying to improve it. And when we released it, it was still kind of still in its beta form. So it's always going to be improved. And so we're going to let the market help us out with how it can be improved.
Well, no, but just actually the user report on this from me is that it's worked great. It's just that you have to sit there at the merchant for like 30 seconds or something in the worst case for the transaction to go through. But the thing that I've liked is that it's actually something that it's 12 words back, but you don't have to manage your channels or something. So it does make it easy.
And for someone like me, look, I'm not tech friendly at all. I mean, okay, I am more than the average person, but really not compared to the average Bitcoiner, maybe less. So I've never opened up a Lightning channel. I could if I wanted to. I do run an umbrella at home, but that's how tech I am. I have to use a built up node to run. So I run a node, but it's not a real node. I mean, it's a node. Sorry, umbrella.
Well, it's still more than average.
It's more than average, yeah. But I've never opened up a Lightning channel. I wouldn't be able to do it from scratch. I'll probably need help from a fellow Bitcoiner how to do that. So I have to rely on such technologies. And so if I rewind back to where I was when I first got onto Bitcoin in 2017, I had someone had to explain to me how to buy Bitcoin on Coinbase and then how to take it off Coinbase and put it into my wallet and secure my 12 words or 24 words. And then I didn't have that person to teach me that not to buy anything else. I went, you know, loose and bought whatever else there was on Coinbase, because that's what you do as a novice to crypto. So, anyway, going back to the thing, wallets they've improved a lot since then, I think. And I think, you know, big leaps from people like Gen3, Aqua Wallet, and I see some other very good wallets out there, is only going to speed up adoption. And that's what we want to do, is actually help the individual. Bitcoin is all about individual sovereignty. It's about individual financial sovereignty. And the wallet is the best thing to do. Of course, we want to take your keys off. You want to take your Bitcoin off into cold storage. But you need to transact your Bitcoin. You need to have, and everyone has, most people have a mobile phone. That's what's going to give you financial sovereignty. That's how you can spend your Bitcoin. But you can also spend your Bitcoin without a phone. But we're not going to get to that.
Well, and I mean, the other thing is it's the opposite approach. When I hear that, you know, it's got the USDT rails and all this, you're helping people to save.
Yes, exactly. They see the savings account and we open up their eyes to like, okay, wait, so the savings account in Bitcoin, what's that Bitcoin Liquid and Lightning spending account? And then all of a sudden USDT, they have it for USDT, but then they see other things. Okay, but then the savings, okay, might as well swap it into Bitcoin for saving. And then they'll see their savings go up over time and they'll put more in there and more.
Magic.
There we go. Adoption.
Magic internet money. Yeah, speaking of, like, so this wallet was released a year ago and I recently saw the Money Electric documentary on HBO.
Ah, yes.
Which featured a lot of you and Samson and Adam and
Peter more
Peter
Samson than I. I got roped into that by joining Gen3.
Yeah, but there's great footage of you drinking espressos in it.
Oh, good. As long as it's just espressos.
I only saw espressos. Anyway, the whole thing is it was filmed during your travels with Samson.
Correct.
About a year ago.
Yes.
So we're seeing the fruits of what you did there right now. Like, we're seeing Maya Parbo, for instance, who we had on for like 2 months ago, I think it was.
She's great. Yeah.
She's great, and I think she's actually got a chance of winning the election.
Does. So she introduced us. The story was that last November, Look, I'm
timelines are difficult.
Yeah, just to clarify, so Maya Parbo is a presidential candidate in Suriname.
I was going to come to that. Yeah, so I don't know. Time for me. So since we last spoke, I guess my daughter was just born after we spoke, and so it's my second child. A lot has happened. I'm trying to get the dates together, but Maya introduced Jan 3 to the president of Suriname. Samson and Ben went out to Suriname, and that was, I'm trying to remember the date, but that's really irrelevant at this point. And Maya was the one who did the introduction. It was all touch and go. Yes, the president's going to see you. No, he's not going to see you. Then we met with another minister, but the president's not going to see you. But finally, they met the president. And we tried to tell them the story how Bitcoin, as we usually do if we get a hookup with a high level politician, is how Bitcoin can help you and your citizens. What you can do with how Bitcoin can actually progress things further, and that's how we sell Bitcoin. We're trying to tell them that Bitcoin, that we know that Bitcoin doesn't need politicians, but politicians will end up needing Bitcoin, and we're trying to tell them that, give them a little piece of the future. And the reception was okay. They were talking about maybe some strategic Bitcoin reserve, 1% of their treasury, something like this, blah, blah, blah. But while this happened, Maya was the one who introduced us. She's like, you know what? I don't really like what's going on here. I'm going to take things into my own hands, and I'm going to run for president. And now there's,
So it's her, on her own?
On her own, of course. She just decided, I'm doing this, And obviously we're completely fully supporting her, she's great. We're trying to support as much as we can, and we wish her all the best, because we need more Mayas out there.
Absolutely. And speaking of politics, Trump was just re-elected in the US. Re-elected, is that the correct term?
Re-elected, yeah.
And
consecutively, but
non-consecutively re-elected. And you may think this or that about that, but the Bitcoin price thought something. And the death went up 10%.
Bitcoin always wins. So
I think it's interesting though the entourage of people he has surrounded himself with here, and we have Bitcoiners, just one Kevin Bacon number away from the White House now. So
Samson met with RFK Jr. The Bitcoin conference. Not the Nashville one, but early in the year somewhere.
Miami.
Year.
I met him in Miami.
You met him in Miami as well. So you did. Yeah, exactly. And he's becoming understanding what Bitcoin's about. And obviously Trump has a big move from Trump to talk about Bitcoin, to openly talk about it and use it on his platform. Obviously he's doing it to improve his voter base. You understand that about 80 million Americans own some form of crypto, and he realizes that that's an individual voter base that he wants to tap into. And if you're going to crap on crypto, we will crap on crypto when you want to. If you're negative towards crypto and Bitcoin, then you're going to lose a lot of voters. And so I think he picked up on that. He has two of his sons, Baron and Eric, who are both into Bitcoin. Not too sure how Maximus they are, but I'm sure they helped persuade him. And he was talking about things like openly talking about self custody, which is huge. And a former sitting American president, now president elect, is talking about the right to self-custody. That is huge. And a strategic Bitcoin reserve, which, to be honest, I mean, that's what's that's going to set off a huge game theoretic effect. But it's not, I mean, it's going to, not the best for the individual, but it's good for adoption, put it that way.
Yeah, it's good for number grow up.
For number grow up is fantastic. Yeah,
and not only the obvious number, but other numbers
but
too.
But as the number goes up, then people start to pay attention, and everyone always is always. Then that's the number one adoption factor is how you got in, because number go up. So
One of the numbers that went up is Google searches for Bitcoin. Yes. It already went up quite a lot, it's amazing. So these journeys, what countries did you visit again? We're in Slovenia now. There's a neighboring country to this one, Liechtenstein, right?
Liechtenstein's not too far from here. It's in the middle of Switzerland. And I was there last year. I spoke to... I was there for a Bitcoin... not Bitcoin, sorry. It's called a... It's for the... let me restart that. It was for an Austrian economic conference, yearly conference. I forgot the name of the Austrian economist that they named the conference off. Some German name I can't pronounce. Every Boom year...
Hoppe?
No, not, definitely not Hoppe.
Okay.
Someone's not with us today. Hoppe is definitely very alive. Aliving. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, the microphones get
it
excited.
Was hopping out.
Yeah, just pull it down.
There, boy.
Yeah, we'll be fine with that. We'll be fine with that. Thanks.
Anyway, forget about the name. It's organized by the cousin of the reigning king, prince. It's a principality. Prince Hans Adam's cousin, Prince Michael, and his, I don't know if it's brother or another cousin, Prince Philip, are the ones. Prince Michael is the president founder of the Austrian Economics Foundation or something in Liechtenstein, organizes the yearly conference. And last year it was about private money. So they were arguing the case for Bitcoin, for gold, for fiat. And
a little visit.
and that's where I got the chance to speak to some. Oh, there's my son. There's a chance I got to speak to some of the royal family, and I spoke to Prince Michael, and he owns Bitcoin. I got to speak to Hans Adam, and I think he signaled that he owns Bitcoin before in the past, or it does now. So there are some other monarchs out there who own Bitcoin. And talking about monarchs, last year we found out that the kingdom of Bhutan. You heard about this news, were mining Bitcoin. I wouldn't say secretly, because their reply was that no one asked. They were mining Bitcoin for about 5 years using the hydroelectricity capacity, which is amazing. It shows you that it's a kingdom, it's a monarchy.
Yeah.
They understand the need for hard money. They understand what low time preference is, good decisions making good decisions for the future. And so they took it upon themselves to transform some of their excess energy from times of the year when they have excess hydroelectricity to mine Bitcoin. And whenever it's stranded, whatever, I don't know exactly the energy mix there, but they're mining Bitcoin.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Bhutan is one of those countries that has a really low GDP, right? Is it?
Maybe was. To be honest, I'm not too sure how the average person is favoring them, but it's not that you hear much about. I should have made an effort to look more into it, but yeah.
Yeah. We don't hear much about Bhutan.
Let's all look into Bhutan.
Yeah. Wait, yeah, we'll need to read up on Bhutan. That's the homework after this episode.
Yep, there we go.
Hey, Luke, did you ever hear of Black Friday?
No, Knut, I've never heard of that.
It's an old South African tradition, and our sponsors, Bitbox and Stampseed, have deals during Black Friday.
Oh, excellent to hear. And actually, I did hear something about this. First off, our friends at Bitbox, they have an excellent Black Friday bundle, including a Bitbox Zero 2, make sure it's the Bitcoin-only edition, a steel wallet, 3 backup cards, and 5 tamper-evident bags, 21% off, plus 10% off everything else. This is running from the 25th of November to the 2nd of December. What do you think of that, Knut?
Sounds fantastic. And what about Stampseed?
Stampseed, yes. And you got it right this time. You got the hammer the right way. All right, so they have 21% off everything in the store. Isn't that awesome?
Well, doesn't get much more awesome than that.
No, not at all.
Well, 22% is more awesome.
22% is more awesome, but it's 21.
Yeah, but 20% is less awesome, so.
Yes, and Stampseed sale is going on from the 29th of November to the 3rd of December. And we're running a sale on the Bitcoin Infinity store too, aren't we, Knut?
We certainly are, Luke. You can get our new book, Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World, and all the other stuff at a 21% discount.
Oh, that's great. How do you do that? It's code Black Friday, right?
No, it's code Spadoinkel.
Oh, okay. How do you spell Spadoinkel?
What do you mean, how do you spell Spadoinkel? If you can't spell Spadoinkel, you don't deserve the discount.
Happy shopping!
Happy shopping!
And so what's kind of the strategic game plan for Gen 3 for, say, the coming year, something like this? Any areas of focus that you're able to talk about?
I'd say the focus is still heavily on LATAM. That's where we see Bitcoin adoption as the ripest. For either for legal tender or for strategic Bitcoin reserve allocation. So we are speaking to several nation states, and nothing is clear at this point, but there is talk out there. So I can't mention anything because
No. This is why this is so hard to discuss, because yes, like half of it is confidential.
One thing is, you know, we're noticing a lot more talk about it, a lot more interest, a lot more people talking, a lot more people getting involved out there, a lot more Bitcoiners reaching out to politicians, a lot more initiatives. It's fantastic. These Bitcoiners are hardworking people, and they understand that, Bitcoin, this is Gen 3 ethos, is that, yes, we understand that Bitcoin is a bottom-up strategy. It's a grassroots network effort that you can't stop, essentially. But, and I said before, it's politicians, it doesn't really care about politicians, but politicians have to care about Bitcoin at some point. So we see that that we have to go and speak and spread the word of Bitcoin, and we can leverage politicians in Bitcoin's favor. So it's kind of a bit like Bitcoin doesn't have money for marketing, so we have to find a way to market Bitcoin. And since there's a lot of government out there, we're going to use that to our favor and teach them about what Bitcoin, how Bitcoin is going to shape and change the future for the better, and tell them how it can help them, the benefits of mining, of self-custody, of store of value, media of exchange, and everything, and hopefully they'll understand. And at the end of the day, if you just get a picture, a photo up with a president, prime minister, minister, with a big Bitcoiner, that is good marketing for Bitcoin. So that's what we're trying to achieve.
See, everything is good for Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and on top of that, of course, Aqua Wallet as well. So that's our bottom up initiatives, and it's the numbers speak for themselves, and we haven't even gotten started yet. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but it's looking good.
Yeah. So you're kind of taking this double ended strategy, right? Like that it's bottom up through the wallet, but top down as well.
Some top down, yeah.
And at the moment, what's kind of in the bottom up approach? Aqua can't actually see anything like in terms of volumes, as I understand it, because it's actually a self-custody wallet.
Yes.
The users hold their own keys.
Open source self-custody, yeah.
It's fantastic. So in terms of the number of users, do you see there being like it more important to get more money into Bitcoin or more people into Bitcoin?
That's a good question. Well, I think more people, of course. Yeah, but more money does help the price, but more people helps humanity.
That's a very good answer.
That's a good answer. But also, one could argue that more money in Bitcoin makes the money better, and that also helps humanity.
Both can help the other.
Both can be true at the same
time. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Not to drive us too technically, mostly out of that. Yeah, kind of. I think we sometimes dip our toes in the technical stuff, but I think we'll keep this in the philosophical space for now. One of the issues that's going to come up eventually is that individuals aren't going to be able to take self-custody of their Bitcoin or use it in a fully self-sovereign way. The total number of transactions that any one person has allocated over a 7-year time frame, mathematically, mm-hmm. the most they can fit into blocks is 2 per person.
Yes.
So do you see any kind of role here for building up kind of this infrastructure for people to be able to sort of self-custody their Bitcoin, but they're not necessarily going to use the base layer, and thereby they're not going to run into a problem where they can't get into the next block, something like this?
Very good question. Hal Finney foresaw this years ago. God bless him. He said something on the lines of, that it would be in some time in the future, when Bitcoin is heavily adopted, that it would just be big reserves of banks or institutions that will be transacting $1 billion worth or whatever value it is at that point on the main chain. So we'll be left using layer 2, layer 3, maybe even layer 4, whatever. I don't know what's going to go happen, but I think the principle of what is Bitcoin is that it's hard money and you can't print more of it, and that still stays true. And as long as it's connected to the main chain and not in something else, if it's done properly, like Liquid or Lightning, I mean, which it will be, that's where the adoption will happen, and that's where you need to increase the adoption numbers and to increase the speed of Bitcoin, not by changing the main chain. The main chain is perfect, in our eyes, my eyes, anyway.
Yeah, Lightning Network gets criticized every now and then for being centralized and like it's custodial. More and more custodial, and not very many people run their own Lightning nodes because it's damn hard to run a Lightning node. But I still think that custodial Lightning is still better than banking, because it's way harder to do fractional reserve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's just another thing with user experience, improvement of user experience, and the same thing will happen with Lightning channels. I think you will get a lot more corporations opening up Lightning channels around the world, and you'll get, but hopefully aligning with the ethos of what is Bitcoin, you will get a lot more Lightning adoption. And Liquid as well, it's a federation. You have about 10 to 15 companies that have to agree to that. So that will increase as well and it'll become even more decentralized. And remember, and also that's, Liquid also is going to helps the transition from the traditional finance, TradFi as people like to call it, to Bitcoin finance, to the real finance. As you can financialize a lot of the stuff that's existing in TradFi, you can do with Liquid. So that's one way of because we don't want that to be a shock in the system. We don't want to just say all of a sudden markets, when they are left to themselves and when there's no interventionism, do go through shocks, moments of deflation. And this has happened. It happened under the gold standard, but it corrects itself and it improves. And there's always a period of growth and a contraction period, and people learn, and then it builds up again and contracts. This was always something that happened under the gold standard, but since fiat was introduced, it happens more extreme, and they intervene more. And now we're at the point where they're intervening, so they're not letting it naturally pull back as it should do, having that massive correction. The last massive correction that we had was 2008.
Yeah.
We haven't had, 2020 was with the pandemic was something, but it wasn't done naturally, basically. And there was a lot of interventionism went in, a lot of stimulus went into this. And this is a thing, this is a problem about fiat is that it's highly manipulated and you're just kicking the can further down the road. And now the debt bubble has gone to some insane amounts of debt around the world.
It's like 2008, that was mitigated by bailing out the banks. Like
And it wasn't a full correction as well.
No, it was... far from it.
But it was big, but it was not like nothing that would have happened if no such thing as if we couldn't intervene.
No, and if this too big to fail mentality keeps going, like what will inevitably happen is that everything becomes a zombie company, and then all of a sudden nothing works. And that's just what we're seeing right now. Like the stimulus doesn't work. It doesn't. People's lives are not getting easier anymore because they're doing these things. So we've been on artificial.
It's just accentuating the Cantillon effect, yeah. As just making properties more appealing, therefore out of reach for the average person, and which is a clear trend we've seen over the last 20 years since the last financial crisis, and yeah. It's only getting worse. As the more they print, the more they intervene, the more money they put into the system, the more it goes into properties for the richer people. And obviously, I mean, I'm not blaming it on rich people. That's what you would do if you had the money and the ability. But you can't, property is not like Bitcoin. Property is in real estate, not like Bitcoin. Now we finally have an opportunity where we can actually have real property. And that is, you can actually buy it's not even a fraction. So you can buy a bit of property, which is yours, no one else's, indisputable, technically tax intervention free. Doesn't matter. It doesn't care about jurisdictions. It can exist anywhere in your head. So they can't tax your head, essentially. No.
So they will try.
So that's why it's so powerful. So Yeah. And at the end of the day, Bitcoin is going to take, this is what we foresee is that as adoption grows, normal folk, the average folk, it's gonna see the need to buy Bitcoin. It's because it's their only way of getting property, only way of securing some sort of financial security for the future.
Yeah,
and that's gonna help grow. It's gonna help them for the future. It's gonna help their children. It's gonna help their community, and in the long run, that's it's gonna make properties actually less appealing. And so at one point you might get to the point where properties will go that down to just their utility value.
Yes, and this is, it already is if you denominate in Bitcoin.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
And that's the thing, like that's how we put it in the new book. It's like if you practice doing something, do you usually get better or worse at that thing you're practicing? And of course you get better, like most of the time. So why aren't all prices going down forever? That should be the obvious follow-up question.
Right, exactly.
And but people live in this fantasy world where they think that their houses are actually going up in value, but that's not. It's their money that is losing
going down in value. Yes. Yeah.
And so everything else becomes money instead. It's a big everything bubble.
Big everything. And, yeah.
And the only way to see that happening is by seeing it through a Bitcoin lens. Otherwise, you're falling for it, and you can't see that it's happening. You need Bitcoin to see that.
Yeah, you have to look at it the other way completely. The inverse, as your book is called.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive almost to how we're being taught, how we're being indoctrinated, but we're not really taught what money is at school. We're not taught how the system works. And you're taught that what you're taught in economics class, in standard economics class, which is Keynesianism, is that inflation is good for growth.
Yeah.
But they think that's but then they don't actually tell you how inflation comes about. They don't talk about increasing money supply. And that also means that they're taking away value from your hard earned.
It is stealing on every level.
People's time and money. Yeah, people's time, people's energy.
Isn't it that there's a misconception between inflation as actually the increase in prices versus the increase in money supply? Because there are things that in the low level increase certain prices.
Of course,
prices.
Yeah, you have natural disasters that will increase. Obviously, some resources get food. Supplies get cut off, so there's that's a very small percentage of inflation rate.
No, but they're deliberately trying to dilute the word, because inflation is officially measured from some basket like CPI.
The CPI basket those are the official numbers, but the way they measure the CPI is not actually correct, not very correct. They pick a basket of goods at that given time. For example, so if something if the average price of that basket goes up, the inflation goes up, then things go in and out of the basket.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And there's no real estate or fine art in the basket.
Exactly. No there's no. So your staple items. Let's say that I think one example was you have your steak. Your beef in there, and that goes up. Let's say it goes double in price. People can't afford beef anymore, so they go for
Impossible
chicken.
Whopper.
Yeah, exactly. Or they go for soy, some soy products, some replacement protein, which only goes up, let's say, 10% or something like that. So they replace the item. So they'll take beef out and put soy in.
No, I read a Rothbard book on the flight to Amsterdam. Is that like a month back? It's called what has government done to our money, and he puts it so clearly, the monetary bill was first a receipt for something, like it's a receipt for a commodity you put in a bank, usually gold, and if you don't get that amount of gold back when you turn in the receipt, then someone stole gold from you.
It's that easy. Yes,
So inflation is always theft. Someone is always stealing something.
Yes.
And this is what people can't understand.
They don't understand that when you're trusting a third party with something and they give you back a receipt for that, for that item, that third party is, and then you can go back and claim your item with that note, but not everyone goes back and claims at the same time. So that third party realizes that they can start doing stuff like say they have more of that thing than they actually do, and they start lending it out and stuff. So then, yeah, humans always looking for a way around.
And the thing is, that system would have actually been completely fine if it weren't for interventions, if it weren't for central banks, right?
Because it would have corrected itself.
Yes. There would have been failures. Of course, people would have lost, but the system wouldn't have been able to continue that
because it was backed by gold at the end of the day. People would have come claiming their gold.
Banks, that's what happened, in the 19th century, for instance.
The free banking era,
Banks went out of business.
Back in the days, you could say, where's my gold? Now you say, where's my money? But what money?
Yeah, exactly. the way I see it, the money on your bank account is a 2 out of 3 multi-sig between you, the bank, and the state.
And the state really has an extra override key at the end of the day, too.
Yes, and they can print more of it. So,
yeah, it's fair. It's not pretty, and look what's happening today. But we have a solution, which is great.
Well, have you thought about if fractional reserve banking is still going to be possible on Bitcoin?
I think some people will still, and a full. I think a country that's fully adopted it, no.
I think there's nothing morally wrong with it, as long as the customer knows that it's going on. So if it's transparent, so if the bank says, okay, you can open an account here, but we're gonna use some of your Bitcoin and buy MicroStrategy stock with it or whatever, or chairs, whatever they're buying, fine art, real estate, then the problem is that the client doesn't know that this is going on.
That's the question. When you sign, when you open an account with a fiat bank, is this in the small print?
I would assume it would be, in fact, yeah.
No, the money printing is definitely not in the small print. The
money printing is not.
There's nothing, if you open a bank account in Sweden, there's nothing about the petrodollar, for instance.
No, I just had a minor aha moment. No, that is the difference. It's that the fractional reserve itself, as in the lending, can still happen. But since you don't have the money printer behind it anymore, then it loses all the power. You can't leverage it. You can't leverage it 10 times, 3 times, you know?
Like at the end of the day, if you're under pure, let's say the whole world theoretically was under Bitcoin standard, lending would become less of a thing because your value of Bitcoin will keep on going up. So you'd be more incentivized to save it. And so you wouldn't, borrowing would be less prevalent, much less prevalent because you can actually save for the stuff that you want, like a house. Everything will be reduced to its utility value, will not be as financialized or commoditized as it is today and inflated like it is today. And it will just be to its face value, utility, how it should be valued. And things will get cheaper over time. So the need for borrowing wouldn't really happen. It would be done there. Of course, people will need some last minute loans and for some unexpected circumstances. But then they, that's pretty much it, I reckon. So,
yeah. And the thing is, the interest rates are low now because they're artificially low. But on a free market, like, sure, interest rates are high obviously higher probably on a Bitcoin standard. But in a free market, interest rates fall over time because... If I can give you a loan with a better interest rate, you will choose my bank instead of the other.
So it's that's the free market. That's great. Yeah.
So that's how they're supposed to go down. Like, and they're also falling to the marginal cost of production. Like,
that's it. Exactly. Yeah.
So this can happen naturally. We can have a very sound, ethical borrowing and lending system. Borrowing and lending are not inherently unethical. It's the fractional reserve thing. It's the theft that is.
And right, then, as you pointed out, where you understand if you're actually lending. I mean, if you're opening up an account where you don't know if that bank is partaking in fractional reserve or not. Now, with education and understanding what Bitcoin is, people will know what fractional reserve banking is. And so maybe you don't want to open up an account with a bank that partakes in fractional reserve, and you want to open up an account with a bank that does one-to-one. And then, because this goes back to the point of where main chain is going, it's going to be unreachable to a lot of people. But that's why we have layer two solutions like Bitcoin. I mean, sorry, like Lightning and Liquid. But you're only going to deal with ones that are doing it properly, correctly, and that are not giving you paper Bitcoin or a one one to whatever ratio. They're going to give you 1-to-1. That's what you want. That's what you're going to be looking for. That's what the market will want. So at the end of the day, yeah, it's going to be, it's, I think fractional reserve market will be something that may be left to those who want a bit more risk. And I don't think, I think maybe with the, with education, people understand that if you just work hard and save, build a family and have good, better education, you're not going to have to take on that risk.
Absolutely. Love it. And how do you think this all gets there? How do you think all of this whole system unwinds, and what will be Bitcoin's role in that?
We're seeing it right now. I think with presidents of the United States of America openly talking about Bitcoin, let's see what he says when he's actually sworn into office in January. Let's see what happens afterwards. Politicians say one thing, then, you know, this they don't go through with it. But I hope that this time he's serious about Bitcoin. And I think I have some reasons to doubt it, because, you know, politicians are politicians. But at the end of the day, it's an increasing amount of votes and a lot of people understanding how the system works. So it's almost a political suicide. Even though he doesn't have a mandate to protect, he does have a Republican Party and a legacy to protect. So hopefully that will lower his time preference. And who knows? Maybe he can introduce some of his family members. That's how democracy works. That's how the Clintons Bushes. Sorry, that's the one. There is. So maybe the Trumps can be a political dynasty of good.
Can hope.
But the other thing, sorry, about seeing what I really hope. Because we see right now the S&P is already, the global equity markets are touching record highs again. When the reality is that people out there are suffering. Average people out there are not having a good time at all. So it's pretty obvious. And if to some people, it's not that obvious, actually, but to a lot of people who actually filter through what's fed to us through the media and actually look and just see what the quality of jobs are out there and the amount of people that are taking on two jobs or more, and the way that rent, house prices, inflation, everything is skyrocketing. Something's going to give at some point, and that's not reflective of equity markets. And people think, oh yeah, if stocks are up, then that means the economy is good. But the real economy is really, really in a shit position right now. So, but then at the same time, that also makes people understand what Bitcoin is, because they understand, why am I having such a bad time? Why have I, I've done everything right. I got myself a degree, maybe 2 degrees, maybe even 3 degrees. And I got myself some job and so on. So I've got myself a job that pays even 6 digits, but I'm still barely paying off, surviving month to month. What the hell is going on? And that hopefully won't result in some big deflationary shock, which it's always the case, but I do believe in shocks to the system and how that's to wake people up. But we want to make sure that we educate people about Bitcoin, and it's a way that you can start stacking and saving for the future, so when that shock does happen, that you're prepared for it.
Yeah, and deflation, like, people are afraid of it, but if you look at computing power, for instance,
constantly
deflating, even against fiat, and it's one of the most successful things in the world. Like, so,
what's the law again?
Moore's law.
Moore's law, yeah.
As opposed to Murphy's.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Jeff Booth, Jeff Booth book. The Price of Tomorrow,
yeah,
where it talks
great
about
book.
Deflation, everything until, it doesn't even talk about Bitcoin until the very end.
No.
It's a brilliant book. Yeah. That's a good book to show to people who you think, here's a really good book.
Yeah.
And they don't really realize about Bitcoin, and then they read it to the end. It's like, oh, okay.
No, it's great. It's a good one. Of those Trojan horse pillings.
Yeah, exactly.
Things.
It's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. If Trump wants to be taken serious, like, he should release Wash on day one. Release Ross Ulbricht.
For sure. Free Ross, 100%. He promised, he said.
Yeah, he promised he would free him day one.
He promised a lot of things. Let's see how many there's been. But I think, Ross should be freed. I will look forward to meeting him one day at a Bitcoin conference, shaking his hand.
That would be fantastic.
That would be just like a beautiful moment because of the history, what he has gone through. I think, you know, for a lot of Bitcoiners, that's going to be historic.
Well, and as long as this does happen, it's also not the only major victory for freedom fighters in the recent times. Julian Assange got free, and I mean that was another major.
That was another great moment.
This show is brought to you by the Bitcoin Advisor, your premier destination for professional Bitcoin management.
Yeah, so if you want help with your Bitcoin inheritance planning or anything like that, you can call us or send us a DM because we're Bitcoin Advisors.
Exactly. They've been serving Bitcoin clients since 2016, and they offer a top-notch Bitcoin concierge service, including collaborative custody and estate planning. We're on the Bitcoin Advisor team ourselves because we believe 100% in what they're doing, and we're happy to tell you more about the Bitcoin Advisor on a call.
So check out thebitcoinadvisor.com or just simply shoot us a DM for some Bitcoin advice. Hey, dear listener, don't forget to like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.
And if you're enjoying the show, the best way you can help us out is spreading the word on your favorite social media platform. Ours is Noster. The show is going Noster first, posting the episodes on Noster one day early. And if you'd like to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to send us a zap on Noster, use a value for value podcasting app to send us a boost, or pick something up from the Bitcoin Infinity store. We appreciate the support.
Yeah, go click like, go click subscribe, and go brush your teeth now.
So there is liberty movements out there.
Yeah, there is.
You know, libertarianism is on the rise, I guess. You could say that. It's disjointed, could never agree with each other.
That's the point.
That's the point, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say. But I'll settle for classical liberalism as well. You know, less dependence on the state, but, you know, we have to find a middle ground at some point, and that's what we've got to reach towards. We can't just shock people with full-on libertarianism. You know, ease into it. You know, that's the goal, really.
Yeah, I think I've always viewed the one of the biggest risks with democracy is just that when you have individualists, they all think different things. Therefore, they don't form big parties. And the more collectivist you are, the bigger the party you form, because you don't care about what the party think. You care about belonging to a certain group.
But that's where democracy in many of its shapes and forms around the world are failing, because they rely too much on a two-party or big party system. And their voting electoral system are always flawed. They may look correct on the surface. Like, take, for example, the first past the post in the UK. It looks very correct. It looks like, oh, that's a good way for small parties to rise up. But then you look at, you need to do simple statistics. I'm not very mathematical, but you just look at the simple, and then you realize that it's not good for the popular vote. So it's only it only suppresses smaller parties. And this is what's happening all over a lot of places in the world. But you have other pockets of where democracy is working to some extent. And I would say that Switzerland is one of them. That's direct democracy. So the political party is not as important, and it's mainly driven by policy, and that's done more in a decentralized bottom-up fashion, where your vote actually matters. It's not perfect, but it's definitely much better than a lot of other places.
Yeah, there's a great Veritasium video about why democracy doesn't work from a mathematical perspective. So strictly mathematics, but this is why it can't work, because it can never get the most popular candidate really or the most popular opinions into power.
No, it's crazy that, but if you look at maths, yeah, as you said, it's pretty obvious. But at the end of the day, most of the world are in the belief that democracy equals freedom.
Yeah, and that it's the one word that is still taboo for almost anyone to criticize.
If I speak bad about democracy, I get insulted and whatever. But I'm saying no, I'm 100% liberty, freedom, but that comes with responsibility. Freedom is a lesson in responsibility, and democracy is a lesson in nanny care. It's a lesson in you get given choice. You get given a platter, you don't have any choice of what's going to be put on that plate, but you have to pick one of those things. And you don't know if one of those things is poison or not.
No. But you see these movements, I think one of the things that the left has been relying on for a long time is that the youth will always vote in favor of more rebellious.
Yes.
You know, the Che Guevara's. but that's not true anymore. Like the younger voting base, like the more libertarian they are. Like they're more freedom-minded.
They're becoming, I think the trend is that they're becoming, a lot of them are quite sadly becoming quite nihilist.
Yeah.
Because they don't see no hope, any future. So that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of young libertarians, growing number of people understanding what Bitcoin is because they're tech savvy and they understand what private keys are, public and private keys. And that's super important.
And I think this is largely due to the internet and Bitcoin. And Bitcoin.
Those two things. Yeah.
Those two things have like provided people with this mirror and this lens to view the world and themselves through that more truly reflects what's actually going on in the world.
Correct.
Yeah. Hey, this is absolutely awesome. Just the optimism here. I mean, it's funny. Like I personally felt quite relieved when Trump won. And I mean, that's not going to be a popular opinion, especially where I'm based in Finland or anything, or even Canada. But the thing is, it's crazy. It really was a case where one side was actually wanting to just increase government control, increase the control, increase the surveillance, increase the censorship and all this, and the other side wasn't. And so are you hopeful that over the next 4 years and even beyond that we can kind of get over some kind of hump?
The divisions are really strong right now. I'd say what's happening in America, if you were a Democrat and you were one of these, you're a Harris supporter, you would think that the Trump guys are indoctrinated. Now here we're sitting, we're saying, okay, we're more Trump supporters. We think they're more indoctrinated. That's the point. Difficult to convince the other side that they've been fooled. But you just look at numbers, you see that more people are going now from being a Democrat, being woke or whatever it is, to being a libertarian. It seemed more the trend going the other way, I think. So I think the numbers, I think that it gives me some hope that people are waking up to these crazy leftist policies. There was a move before, pre-COVID, pre all that, and during COVID, that there was a lot of groupthink and collectivism happening. But we realized that people woke up to the dangers of that, and now individualism is rising up again. So, yes, I'm hopeful that we're gonna mend a lot of those factions that have appeared.
I know this is an old Jordan Peterson theory, and that is that on the right there's always been a very clear where the no-go zone is. Like if you go into actual fascism and racism, then that's a no-go zone. You can't do that. Whatever. I think all politics are on the left side of the aisle, but that's another thing. Yeah, you go from an origo zero point, and then everything's to the left. But that's beside the point. But on the left, it's been more unclear where the line is drawn, like what's an okay opinion to have and not. And I think they've found out that you know, men beating up women in the Olympics, for instance, is simply not okay in most people's minds, and mutilating children
is not
okay.
It's not okay.
So I think they're finding out where that line is drawn.
Right,
and the backlash is huge, and I'm a bit afraid of it because like throwing gay people off of rooftops is not a good thing either. Like, I mean, all we want is our inherent natural born right to be left alone. That's how it should work.
Yeah.
The individual is the smallest minority group. That's whose rights you need to defend.
That's well put, but we're not taught that. And I think we should be taught that. And that's why I think education should be privatized. But again, it can't be done in a shock. I think it has to come stage by stage. But I've seen efforts around, like for example, in Serbia, we have to follow the Serbian system. And luckily there's no woke stuff in there. But it's fine. It's not. I'd say it's a lot of the propaganda that was in there against my family has been taken out, and that's great. And they haven't adopted any of that or any of that cultural Marxism that's being adopted by some of the liberal West educational systems. But you know, it's great to see propaganda being taken out, and I think we can do a step further and make private education more affordable and raise teachers to another level. But I think in order to do that, you know, you have to, I think government, the state has to place more resources in teachers. But it's a balance that you have to make sure that they pay more resources in teachers, but without it affecting what they teach. They should be taught what the market wants, what the individuals want. So, but I think over time, then the teachers become a sought after profession, and that's what I see, that we then can go towards more of a private educational world, where teachers are one of the most valued members of society, and our children are taught the right things. I don't know. I'm trying to construct in my head how the transition will happen, but this all happens along with Bitcoin being adopted more.
Yeah. Would you agree that the East is the new West in terms of freedom?
So I would say
in Europe.
Yes, and no. Yes, actually, I would because when I moved to Serbia, I moved in 2020 with my wife and son. We've had a daughter. We had a daughter last year, so there's four of us. But during the whole COVID years, I bumped into a lot of Canadians who came up to me and they were saying, "Hey, you know, we're from Canada. We're Serbian from Canada. How are you doing? Good to meet you and stuff." I was like, "Great. So how long are you here for?" "No, we moved back." And it's happened once, twice, and I think it happened about five or six times. So it was a trend. And every time they said, "Yeah, we just don't like what's going on in Canada anymore," but so they moved to Canada in the first place to get away from communism or socialism. And now they're moving away from Canada, they get back to Serbia because of similar things. So this is, yes, your point to where East is West is East is true. And the East, where I'm from, Serbia, is very aware of what indoctrination is, mass scale brainwashing can do to society. Most of the East, most of the communist bloc, Serbia wasn't, Yugoslavia wasn't really quite inside behind the Iron Curtain, but it was still heavily brainwashed. And now we're all waking up, we're aware of that. And now we see that happened in the West.
So how do you break that cycle? If that is like a real thing, that people are moving, their grandparents moved to Canada and now they're moving back, is there a risk of this happening again and then moving back to Canada when?
Yes, it is.
And how do we break that cycle?
We make people more financially independent. And that's where it comes back to what we're here talking about is Bitcoin. Is if you have the ability to save in something that can't be printed away, eroded away, taken away from you, if you have something that gains in value over the future, then you're gonna have security and that's gonna make your life a lot more stable. You're gonna plan, have longer relationships with you're going to have more children, you're going to invest in yourself, in your family, and then that's going to then invest in your community, and that's just going to have a ripple effect, and that's how civilization is born. Civilization is born from the saver investor. This is what I think I read in Hopper in his first chapter of Democracy, the God of Phil. The saver investor is what creates a ripple effect of other people tending to do the same thing. And they go from childs to adults, from barbarism to civilization, and that's how civilizations are born. So, I think it's just a stabilizing effect. If we have hard money and if we have a good form of money, then we're gonna reduce the migrations we've had all around the world. And that's a huge issue. That's one of the central issues to why we have a lot of this populism, a lot of people. Screaming on social media about losing or winning or whatever at politics and elections, and they make no difference at the end of the day. But what's actually happening is that we have imbalances of money. I'm trying to structure this thought over here, but it's basically fiat pockets all around the world behaving different ways, and with more value in some countries than other countries, and those countries with more value stealing from the smaller countries, so then the smaller countries feel they need to move into the richer countries, and so you have this big capital human flight happening into the richer companies, and people moving around everywhere. I'm going
the way I see it is pretty simple. Like, there's barbarianism and civilization.
Yes, exactly.
And the barbaric way of doing stuff is taking it from the other person. And the civilized way is exchanging goods and services voluntarily and with consent. So either soldiers cross borders or goods and services do. And this is what it's all about. Like, it's the state is inherently violent since it coerces people into certain behavior.
The less interventionism, the less coercion there is, the less taxes there is.
The more civilization.
The more the civilization, the more competitive you are, the more of a service provider you are to your citizens, the more you'll attract better. You'll attract better behavior as well at the end of the day.
One thing back to another, how is Bitcoin adoption going in Serbia?
A lot of more people are becoming aware of it, and I hear more people talking about it. And I think now, thanks to Trump, that's going to be a big thing, especially if he starts making some big moves in it. Serbia has great capacity for technical minds. A lot of developers in Serbia, a lot of good core developers secretly living in Serbia, and a lot of Serbs, great Serbian Bitcoiners around the world. Of course, Serbia has a big diaspora around the world. I would like to see, I like them to be more Bitcoiners in Serbia. I'd like to see adoption grow further, and I like to people be more open about it. And I like to see Serbia to be to make some big moves in Bitcoin, and I'm going to help drive that. I see a big potential that Serbia can be good for Bitcoin, and obviously Bitcoin's going to be good for Serbia. And I think Serbia is a very cash orientated society. Cash is king there. They like their privacy. Great. So the best thing there is Bitcoin for that. So we are natural Bitcoiners. So there will be a big adoption. I think it's just education needs to grow further there. And we'll do that by translating books, by getting out, speaking more about it. And I see a good future for Bitcoin adopted in Serbia.
For the world as well, right?
Yeah, of course. That's just me being the patriotic Serb. Yeah.
No, that was my sort of lame attempt to, I don't know, extrapolate.
But
all
I think,
the way out. But no, it's
very funny, Luke.
If Serbia starts to make moves, any country starts to make the move, and if I have a big voice, then I need to learn the language better. So if I can drive some adoption there, then you'll have. It's always that whole, oh, what are they doing? Why can't we do that? And this is what we're seeing in Latin America. That's why in Central America, it's ripe for some sort of Bitcoin adoption. Or Latin America, you see a lot of Bitcoin crypto use in Latin America. They know what they're the closest subjects to the dollar's superiority and control. So they know that they need to get away from that. But at the same time, they're the mining dollars at the same time. But that's why you introduce them to Bitcoin. They get it much more instantaneously, and they're also seen more inflationary shocks than any other parts of the world as well. They've been subjected to fiat scams all throughout the history, especially places like Argentina. Not that Europe is immune to it. Serbia and Yugoslavia in the 90s experienced the third worst case of fiat inflation in the world ever. But somehow we have short-term memories, and we don't remember that. And when cash is introduced again, it's like, yeah, cash is great. You can hide it under your mattress.
So any last words? I think this has been a great talk, and we could keep going on for a while, but I think we're
running out of air in here.
I think so, yeah, yeah, something
like
that.
We're running out of oxygen.
No, but anything else on your mind that we haven't discussed already, or any parting words?
Parting words? I think the Trump win was a good boost for Bitcoin. You saw that in the price. Let's keep that momentum going. We all have a part to play in this. Let's keep the adoption needle high, pushing on maximum, because now is a good time to get people on board as the price is high, and to teach them about what money is, what the values of hard money is, and the history of money. So, big message out to Bitcoiners out there to keep on doing what they're doing, and we're winning.
Fantastic. Anywhere you want to send our listeners, like online or
elsewhere? I don't really talk much about Bitcoin on my social media, but I have joined Noster.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw.
Yeah, Prince, PRINCFILIP.
Yeah, the correct spelling, of course.
Yeah, in Serbian, yes. So I just joined Noster, but you can follow me on Twitter, which is the same with the one. And I'm on Instagram, but you know, no, I know Bitcoin is not so much on Instagram.
So follow at Prinkflip and everywhere.
Well, it depends how you pronounce the C. yes, so follow me on Noster now.
and Jan 3 as well, right?
Sorry, yeah, Jan 3 at jan3.com or com something. Well,
we'll put all the info in the description.
But yeah, follow me on Twitter if you want to see me doing a lot of royal duties now as well. So
yeah.
You can see nothing we didn't even talk about, but
every 20th post, there's some hint of Bitcoin.
Not
anymore.
No, I'm now going to focus more Bitcoin on Monster and much less on Twitter because of the backlash. You get a lot of very vocal people or bots. Very small majority, but they make my Twitter profile look great.
No, it's usually some beautiful picture of your family in a beautiful setting. Or you with some bearded old man in a robe somewhere.
Well, that's what we want. Now we're going to continue the conversation. But since I became a Bitcoiner, it's also the time I got married, had my created a family, and understood the values of family values and traditions and why it is so important to have money that you can generate generational wealth with and have some stability for the future. And this is something I didn't have when I got married. Just didn't seem that bright. The future did not seem very bright for my son when he was born, and I wanted to fix that. And I was searching for truth, and then I found Bitcoin. So it just happens that, you know, we're going in that direction, and it's fantastic. And I believe in tradition. I believe in monarchy. I believe in its low time preference as a great form of governance. And that's another conversation. So that's what we're trying to push out there is stability, unity, and a prosperous future and family values.
Good luck with all of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on again.
No, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, John. And to the excited Mike.
All right.
This has been the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Thank you for listening, and thank you again.
Thanks, guys.